Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Titan Company Limited Q3 FY21 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. C.K. Venkataraman, MD, Titan Company Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you very much. Good evening to everyone on the call. I'm joined here by my colleagues, Suparna, Rajeshwari, Manish, Dinesh, Nandu, Soumen, Ajoy, and Subbu, and a new colleague who has joined us, who is Ashok Sonthalia, CFO designate. Welcome, Ashok. I'm also happy to share that we had our first in-person board meeting after 1 year. The last board meeting of the board in person was in February, around the same day in 2020. What an eventful year. It was wonderful to meet with the board members in Chennai and share results of such significance. It was also great to top calendar 2020 on a high note like this. I would like to thank all of you on the call for the great encouragement, support, pushing that you keep doing on us all the time. I would also like to thank all the workers of our vendor partners, Titan Company's own employees in factories and offices, in stores, and all our retail partners and their staff who braved, particularly the first few months of COVID and even thereafter, and continued putting themselves at some risk or the other to help the company deliver a performance which is very encouraging, gratifying, and points to a very solid 2021 as well, and FY22 as well. The presentation has anyway been uploaded, so I have nothing particular to share. We're all feeling very happy and pleased with the results, and I would like the questions to begin.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking questions. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles.
Manoj.
Manoj is there.
Yeah.
The first question is from the line of Manoj Menon from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi, team. Good evening. I have only one question, actually. It's essentially, when I look at the recovery in discretionary consumption in general, it appears to be extremely strong. When I look at, let's say, paints as a basket, consumer durables as a basket, et cetera, versus jewelry. Now, it appears that the jewelry demand recovery, going by, of course, what Titan has reported, because we really don't have any peers currently. It appears to be a little underwhelming versus the other discretionary consumption. Just wanted to understand, is it more to do with, let's say, your revenue mix, the store mix, which can't be because you're largely national, more national than anyone, actually, wedding exposure, or it could be just a case of, let's say, any other player outperforming because of a higher wedding exposure, or it's just that the postponed demand for jewelry is yet to materialize. Just wanted your thoughts on this, because it's really not a one-quarter thing, because it probably could have some implications for the next 12-18 months. Thank you.
Could you just elaborate a little on that, Manoj?
Yeah. Venkat, actually, what I'm just saying is, let's say, okay, now I think I'll take 30 seconds to say this. Take a step 9 months back, when we looked at, let's say, all of discretionary consumption, the assumption was that, let's say, a paint is more of a postponed demand, whereas, let's say, an airline seat is a perishable commodity. You kind of had some view saying that, okay, there are certain demand which will come back at some point in time, but there are certain lost demand. Now, when I look at an Asian Paints reporting a 33% volume growth in the current quarter, the only thing which I had to do was look at the 9 months growth rather than one quarter. But 33 tells me that some of the postponed demand has actually, pent-up demand or postponed demand, whichever word we use, appears to have materialized. But when I look at jewelry, I know I can't generalize jewelry because, I don't really have a peer group to compare here. The 16% revenue growth, appears a little underwhelming in my observation. And honestly speaking, if you think this observation is wrong, happy to take that because my comparison is not just with paints. So when I look at, let's say, Havells, results or a Crompton results or paints as a basket, let's say what a Berger reported. So it is across discretionary consumption in general appears to have had a much faster recovery versus jewelry. Was my generic observation.
Yeah, sure. I have no particular comment because it's very, very difficult to compare a jewelry recovery with a paints or fans, for example. All I can say is that we had a certain recovery target in mind, which we have been sharing quarter after quarter, which is certainly to reach 100% levels by Q4. That was, if you recollect, in fact, start delivering growth by Q4. And we are ahead of our own recovery rate targets, and that's what is satisfying to us without really getting into cross-category comparison because it's a very complex subject. I don't know if anyone will have a handle on that kind of a thing. But especially categories which are that widely different from a category like jewelry.
Fair enough, Venkat. Actually, only one, because I don't have a second question, just one follow-up on this, is it, in your view, is it anything to do with the revenue mix which you have with a relatively lesser wedding exposure, let's say, versus other players, which would essentially mean that the actual, that perishable commodity stroke, lost demand possibly for you could be a little higher than, some of your larger competitors. Is that even a right hypothesis for me to even think about?
I'm not really sure, Manoj. It's a very complex sort of scenario that you're building for which I have no easy answer.
Okay. No problem. So I'll touch base with Pulkit separately on this. And I just also wanted to, thank Subbu for all the help for all these years and wanted to wish him all the best for the next phase in career. And also wanted to congratulate Ashok and, all the best to Ashok as well. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Manoj.
The next question is from the line of Avnish Roy from Edelweiss. Please go ahead.
Congrats on good numbers. My first question is on eyewear. Last many years, eyewear margins have been either negative or hardly any profits. But Q2, Q3, significant improvement. You have called out this quarter that better product mix, lower discounts. So what is driving this better product mix? And second, lower discount, is it because Lenskart has reduced its activities both on advertising and promotion significantly? And do you see that as structural or just one or two quarter phenomena?
This is Shoman here, Avnish. I handle the eyewear business. Our observation is that we have been consciously driving consumer discount down right from the Q2 onwards, ever since we have reopened the business. That's factor one. And we have been also looking at channels which are not really productive. So we have either marginalized some of the channels or even exited some channels. So therefore, you look at it, our overall payout has significantly come down. Second thing, we have managed by focusing more on house brands. We have been able to contain our material cost to about below 21% compared to last year, say about 24-25%. These are the two factors which have significantly influenced our GC and consequently the final PBT.
And any comment on Lenskart because they have been the disruptive player in the segment for many years. Any change you are seeing there?
Frankly, their facts and figures are not so transparent. So we don't really look at their facts and figures. We look after our customers. We do what we think we are good at. And that's about it. No comments on Lenskart.
Yeah, my question was more on the market, not on the numbers. But I got the message. The company has been focusing on the core. So you did divest some of the non-core. So this 137 crore write-off which has been taken in Fabril Yuba, does it mean that medium long term you would look at divesting even this part of the business?
So I think the 137, we discussed, I mean, we at least talked about it in the press report that we made when we took that decision to scale down on Pavlodar. Well, from our perspective, at this point, it didn't make sense investing further. And I think it was just a question of saying not now. We will continue with Pavlodar in India. But as far as the global ambition at this point is concerned, we said it didn't make sense, particularly with the pandemic hitting us so hard. So it was just that, nothing else.
Sure. And one last one, sir. On studded share, 26%. So high gold prices in general and the gold doing well. So beyond 30%, is it looking tough next 1 year to touch in the studded?
Hi, Ajay here. No, I think we are beginning to see very good recovery in studded as well. I think when you're looking at ratios, it's a weighted average effect of plain coins and studded. So coins and plain continue to do very well for various reasons. So we are happy because studded has shown a good growth in quarter three. And at seeing a 9% growth is good. We are into growth from recovery. So, and we are seeing better growth now as well. In fact, in January, it's even better. So the ratio is certainly going to be higher as we go forward. Quarter four already, because we have started activation, the ratio will be certainly much higher. Quarter three is a low studded ratio quarter in any case.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you, sir. That's all from me. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Avi Mehta from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Hi, Venkat, Subbu, and team. I just had two questions. One on the franchisee health in the watch segment. We've seen a significant amount of closures for some time. Just wanted if there is any measures that we are taking or how's the general franchisee health over there. And B, I wanted to kind of just get a comment on build on the comment that Ajay said about Jan being healthy. Any idea of how we are trending in terms of growth rate? Has the strength of 16% continued or kind of gone up given this activation?
Maybe Ajay could do that and then.
Yeah. So I'll take it first, Avi. Retail growth was actually 13% in quarter three. The primary NSV is showing up at 16, including exports. We are seeing about a 28% growth in retail in the month of January.
Okay, wow. Okay.
Hi,
and,
this is...
The activation part you said studded share is also is the reason for the, is the driver, right? I just wanted to reconfirm that.
Yeah, so studded is also growing pretty well. Studded has climbed from 9% growth in retail of quarter three to 16% growth in Jan. The ratio is sitting at 39% in the month of Jan. But that's typical. 43% was the figure last year in Jan.
Okay. And the franchisee health?
So we have actually closed a few fast-track stores because their turnover was anyway a little low. And due to COVID, they became unsustainable. But otherwise, franchisees are on track. We have given them a lot of support in terms of not giving them extra stock and helping them liquidate stock before we build them further stock. And overall, a lot of support in getting more consumer demand back. So franchisees, as such, a lot of stores are now in the growth path, and the others are also recovering well. Better news from the smaller towns and better news on high street than on malls. But overall, the franchisee community has a storm, and they are now geared up for growth both in this quarter and in the year ahead.
Okay. And thanks again, Subbu, and wish you a lot of luck. It's been really great interacting with you. Thanks.
Thank you, Avi.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Percy Panthaki from IIFL. Please go ahead. Mr. Percy Panthaki from IIFL, you may go ahead with the question.
but I just wanted to ask from a different angle. Basically, I think in Q3, we would have seen a lot of sort of pent-up weddings. Those people probably would not get married in the first 6 months of the fiscal. All of them had their functions, etc., in the third quarter, and maybe to some extent that continues in the fourth quarter. And therefore, there is probably, and correct me if I'm wrong, some kind of sort of temporary support to the top line coming from this. And let's say by March, if the pent-up demand of weddings is sort of exploited already, and then we go into a normalized period from April onward, do you see any risk to the top line from this phenomenon?
Yeah, so weddings have been good in quarter three and quarter four. Wedding growth was 10% in quarter three for us and is trending upwards at 16% in Jan. We expect wedding demand to continue to be double-digit growth in quarter four. And in fact, we also expect, our expectation is quarter one next year will also see a lot of weddings. So next 5 to 6 months, we are very bullish on weddings. So I don't think that's going to impact top line. In fact, it should benefit us.
Also, one of the views that we had, theories we had way back in April, May, and it's turning out to be correct, is that both because of the substantial, in fact, total absence of travel, as well as substantial pruning down of the pomp and splendor in the celebration of weddings, the jewelry purchases in families will get a boost because of a share of overall wallet increasing. And more and more franchises I've been talking to have been actually talking about this phenomenon. And 21 is going to be no different from both these points of view. Certainly travel. To some extent, the celebrations may improve a little bit, but nothing like what they were. I'm sure there are not going to be five cuisine dinners and stuff like that, which we used to have. So therefore, apart from the weddings of 2021, I think the share of the wedding jewelry within the overall wedding expenditure is going to benefit the industry and Tanishq.
So in Q3, wedding jewelry grew by 10% versus a 16% overall growth. So actually wedding grew slower than the overall growth despite this sudden pent-up sort of number of weddings coming up in Q3. I would have thought that actually the wedding jewelry growth in Q3 would have been much higher than your overall growth. So what am I missing? What is the lack of understanding on my part here? Why is this not happening?
So, first of all, 16% is a primary NSV sale, including exports. Retail growth is 13%, value growth.
Right.
Okay, against 13, it's 10% growth in wedding. We are seeing we saw a good jump in coins as well, and high value started during quarter three, which were ahead of the growth. Coins, of course, continues to do very well over the last several quarters because of bullishness on gold, but high value started has come into play in a big way, and we are seeing that growth also.
And some of it could be for wedding also.
Yeah, some of it could be wedding because we tend to classify only the plain jewelry into wedding. Difficult to kind of
categorize that. Got it. My second question is on the.
Sorry, to conclude.
Contribution
of wedding is 20% to the overall sale this year as well as last year. So what I would like to say is that the overall wedding contribution has now picked up to the same levels as last year.
Okay, got you. Second question is on the eyewear and to some extent even the watches margins, which have clearly surprised at least me on the upside. And I understand that you've done a lot of cost engineering here, but I'm sure that some of the cost engineering is sort of not permanent in nature. I mean, some of these costs will get restored as the business improves. So just from that point of view, can you give some idea on what part of the cost engineering is permanent in nature and therefore what kind of sustainable margins we can see in these segments once the demand is restored and we are actually seeing growth in sales? Because your eyewear margins have been 0 to -2 in the last few years. Watches also has been close to what you've reported now, whereas your sales are actually 12% down. So if they were, let's say, growing at a 10-12%, it would have been much higher than 10% also. So just some flavor you can give on the sustainable margins of these two segments, given the cost-cutting initiatives that you've done.
On the gross margin level, as I said, our overall payout has been controlled quite a lot, and this, not all of which will be sustainable. Let's say in the quarter three, if our overall payout is 37% this year, compared to, I think it was 42% I think last year, it would probably go to a level of about 40%, because Houseband brand contribution has significantly risen in the last several months, and specifically quarter three. I think other brands, other non-Titan brands contribution would rise as we go forward. So therefore, payout would probably go up, and consequently, it will also influence our MAT cost. So therefore, our we estimate that next year, that is FY22, probably we'll see a gross contribution of somewhere around 64-65%. But it will be higher than before.
On the, I think overheads, if the question is also on overheads, yeah, we do have two types of savings this year. One is what we call internally sustainable savings, and this is part of the war on waste program that we had. These savings will continue into 2021-22 also. This today, as a ballpark, would be roughly 50% of the total savings that we achieved in 2021. Because the biggest cut that we are actually taking this year is advertising in 2021 because of the level of activity that we are having. Having said that, I think by quarter four, we are very close to the normal ad spend. But the overall spend so far has been lower. Of course, we did get rental waivers due to the pandemic as well and a few things like that. But the sustainable savings are still a fairly material part and will continue to deliver higher margins from the next year.
Understood. Very clear. That's all from me. Thanks and all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Aditya Soman from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good evening. Firstly, I just wanted to check on the status of Golden Harvest. What have been, how has the sort of recruitment trended in the quarter, and where do you expect recruitment to be over the next 6 months or so?
So we've seen a good recovery in the Golden Harvest enrollments. Quarter three is still below what we would have wanted. Internally, we are targeting higher. So, but it's picked up pretty well, and in fact, quarter four on also, it's been a very good pickup. So we are now very, very confident of the enrollment going up considerably over the next couple of quarters. So, you know, I think the recovery has moved into growth mode even there. And it's directly linked to number of buyers. You know, so far, just to clarify, even in quarter three, while our total retail growth was 13%, it was on the back of ticket value growth. We were still on, in terms of number of buyers, still at a 97% recovery on retail. So, you know, and Golden Harvest enrollment kind of follows that pattern in terms of buyer recovery. So we are now seeing growth in buyer and therefore also Golden Harvest in a stronger manner in quarter four. So outlook is positive, very positive.
No, understand. Very clear. Thanks. And just following up on that, I mean, in terms of your growth in Jan, the 28% growth, you mentioned that the footfalls have also now improved. But what has been the main reason for the acceleration in growth, say, from 3Q to January? And especially given that the base for gold prices will also start normalizing, I guess, at some point in January.
So, in the month of Jan, we have seen growth both in walk-ins as well as number of buyers itself. We are seeing a very healthy 13%, that's a double-digit growth in the month of Jan in terms of number of buyers itself. And yes, ticket prices will start kind of normalizing downwards. But yes, that's how we are getting the 28% overall value growth.
All right, thank you. No, I think that's very clear. I think that partly also answers the first question on sort of why growth has been somewhat different for your category compared with, say, some of the other categories. But I think that aspiration answers. Right, thank you.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, we'd like to request participants that in order that the management is able to address questions from all participants in the conference, to please limit your questions to two per participant. Should you have a follow-up question, we request you to rejoin the queue. The next question is from the line of Prasad Deshmukh from Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good evening. So two questions. Firstly, in the first three quarters, how much of the purchase in gold jewelry for Tanishq was initiated by the consumer online? And also, do you believe if at all this was a big number, it's an, a lasting trend here on?
Well, online plus joint closures, if you look at it this way, they may complete the transaction online itself or might finally come and buy it at the store with a conversation with the store. So overall, that has been close to, yeah, three and a half times, 3.5x of last year. So we are seeing a huge jump in online and omni, if you would call it. The other bit related to digital is we are also seeing a huge jump in video calling, that is remote selling, remote shopping, both video calling and endless aisle. So all these put together, we are clubbing under the digital engine, which is seeing a very good jump this year. As a proportion, it is still quite small. I would say the omni plus online piece is still, 2-3% kind of number. But we are seeing that climb quickly. And total digital, including remote shopping, is trending around, 7.5-8% of the total sales, which is including remote shopping and endless aisle.
Got it. Thanks. And the second question is, there are these talks of a gold exchange regulated by SEBI. So just wanted to get your thoughts on how this will impact the industry's pricing of gold and if there are any cost implications for Titan, especially in terms of the way you hedge the gold.
Sir, I'm not aware of any significant thing which has come on this. So we may have to wait till we get some clarity on what this is about. I don't know.
Okay. Got it, sir. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from Amit Sachdeva from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, everyone, and congratulations for a good set of momentum in January and also good numbers in Q3. So given the jewelry has been discussed in plenty, I just wanted to sort of ask you something about Taneira. And we are at its 14 stores and perhaps, COVID has been a disruption year for apparel and in general. But if not for COVID, are you really happy with the KPIs per store now? And in that context, if you could share some thoughts on the Taneira's business plan, when this format will be ready for, say, capital light expansion, are there any supply side challenges in scaling up? And we noticed Kurtis has been launched, so Pret-a-Porter kind of proposition is being added. So where are we on the expansion journey? And are we in the same phase where jewelry was in late 90s? And how basically large you think this opportunity could be? Is it a safe assumption to make that it could be a potentially very large new business?
Thanks, Amit. I'm requesting Rajeshwari, our CEO for the Ethnic Business Division, to speak about it.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you, Venkat.
Thank you, Amit. Very interesting question. One of the biggest growths that we've seen, we've got about 14 stores now across six cities. One of the biggest growths we've seen is in Tier 1, Tier 2, Tier 3 towns.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been addressing it very differently this year, despite COVID. In the last 2 months, we've started a concept called Trunks. These are largely pop-up stores, three-day events, across many of our sister brands,
mostly Tanishq stores, which brings in a different set of customers in, many of them new to Tanera, of course. Some of them new to Tanishq itself. So we've seen a rampant growth across. We've had about 12 trunks so far in the last 2 months since we could start moving out. So we see a lot of growth between Tier 1, Tier 2, Tier 3. We plan to have over 75 trunks following this trend in FY22. So that's one, that's where the growth will come from. The second one is, as Ajoy has already mentioned, which is on remote shopping. Customers, we have a concept called the try at home. So we show them on a video what the products are all about. We take them across to their place and sell the product to them there. So try at home, video calling have been two notable ways of reaching out to customers. We've also just launched our Omni Aisle project. It's just gone live a couple of weeks ago, wherein all our products are available online for customers to shop from anywhere. So we see the growth coming in from tier 1, 2, 3, and as far as existing stores in the metros are concerned, we see a lot of increase. We've got about 17% growth in the ticket size, which is driven by wedding shopping. So the discretionary shopping is slowly coming back. We're seeing signs of it in January. But wedding shopping has been holding us in good stead. So many more tier 1, 2, 3 trunks coming up. A few more stores saturating the existing six cities is what we're looking at.
Sure. So is the e-commerce be a big driver? My question was that, ready-to-wear or prêt-à-porter kind of proposition is being added with kurtis. Is this the play going to change, like from a product profile point of view? Because that could create a very different kind of consumer coming to store. The reason I'm asking this question is that, we are at 14 stores and we have around, 350-odd Tanishq plus stores. And are these the natural owners of even Tanera franchise nearby? Or how do you see the scale up in 5 years? Should we assume that it will be like a 300 stores in 5 to 7 years, or it will be like a very slow build? How we should like think about this business?
So we are looking at it in two different ways. One is bringing it closer and ramping up the customer experience. As you know, Tanera is a very different format from your existing sari stores. So we are looking at expanding and exploring our browsing format. A larger number of customers experiencing our product. And as we go along, certainly a larger number of stores. We are still crafting out the five-year strategy. Going forward, I think we will see a lot more mirroring of the Tanishq play. Certainly the customer is almost 90% common. So as we get there, we'll...
...place to share concrete stuff in our May investor conference.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, a reminder to participants that you may press... Please limit your questions to two per participant. The next question is from the line of Richard Liu from JM Financial. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. Subbu, I just wanted to check this with you. If I look at the segment EBIT growth for the quarter, it is something like 11.5% for the standalone business, all the segments together. But then if I look at the EBIT growth in the P&L, that is about 17.5%. And I guess the only difference between the segment EBIT growth and the PBIT growth in the P&L is the unallocable line. So what has really happened in that unallocable line to have driven growth, profit growth of the company by 5 percentage point higher?
Maybe it's the 137 crores of extraordinary thing that...
No, this is excluding extraordinary.
Maybe I'll get back to you on this. I'm not able to see the number here, Richard. I'll get back to you.
Okay. And Venkat, if I can, just indulge myself here, this is more from a broader consumer perspective, and I've been a little perplexed by really what's happening in terms of consumption growth, right? And, so one has really gone through, this pandemic, which probably is one of the worst human crises we've seen at least in our lives in recent times. And if I look at growth, that was there pre the pandemic and post the pandemic, everybody seems to be wanting to consume more and willing to consume more and spend more, right? Be it jewelry, be it what Manoj said about paints and other consumer durables, be it housing, etc. Based on your insight, vis-a-vis your conversations with either franchisees or consumers, what do you think is responsible for this kind of a behavior? Because it seems counterintuitive to me, and I'm not really able to get as to why would behavior be this type. I know you talked a little about lower travels and lower spend on weddings, etc. But the whole pickup in sentiments, despite the fact that we have job losses, income losses, etc. in the economy, seems to be totally paradoxical, so to say. If I can request your insights here, if you have any.
One thing would be the segments from an economic class point of view that, let's say, a company like Titan is dependent on. And while there are job losses and all that you're referring to, Titan Company's dependence on the middle and affluent upper middle is high, very high dependence on even salaried class, for example, as opposed to business class for its own business. And the salaried class of the kind that Titan targets, generally by and large been left, protected by even the employers, while there may have been some small pay cuts and stuff like that, but the jobs have been there and, they have not. And so many of us actually sitting at home spending less on, many things that we would otherwise spend on, including eating out, movies, like somebody was telling me, even on petrol. One of the directors was telling me that the expenditure on petrol has crashed because the car is not being used. So there is a certain overall, my income hasn't dropped much or maybe hardly dropped, and my expenditure on some of these things is substantially low. And I'm feeling, sitting at home, starting to get a little frustrated. I'm not talking about myself there, okay? I'm just talking about the world. And therefore, there's a, sort of feeling, pent-up feeling in me to enjoy life. And I think that is manifesting. And of course, many companies have driven gifting as a concept. And therefore, even if there is no need from a consumption point of view, but the gifting sort of counterbalances that gap in demand perhaps and gets a product to somebody who ends up using it even if not wanting to buy it himself or herself. So these are factors at play, very, very difficult to actually pin down honestly, but best guess is of this kind of underlying.
I'm surprised, Venkat, you didn't mention the ubiquitous unorganized to organized element out here. Is there nothing of that incremental that you see at all in this whole phenomenon?
No, you're right. Certainly from jewelry, we are seeing it very, very markedly. Also, the supply side challenges that the unorganized sector normally faces has been aggravated in these times because of finances and all that, and even problems with vendors in terms of their own supply side challenges. The second is somewhere I think consumers are also finding big brands and in categories like jewelry, the trust and authenticity also driving a greater acceleration towards, brands like ours. You're right.
So I'll add a little bit to what Venkat said. Actually, the ticket values in jewelry, the growth in the greater than 1 lakh, greater than 2 lakhs is much better. In the sub 1 lakh, in quarter three, it was still on a recovery mode in terms of sheer number of buyers. So that kind of reinforces a little bit of what
Venkat
said.
And, the point you said about the organized benefiting from the unorganized, just give you an example of yesterday, Bhilai and Durgar, Twin Cities, and we have a store in Bhilai. And I was talking to the franchisee yesterday, and he told me that there was an 8 lakh diamond jewelry purchase by a sarpanch in a Durg village, I mean a village outside Durg. And he was keen to know what happened, and he called him up after a week after the guy had bought. And that guy said, I normally buy from, you know, the local jeweler in Durg, but my daughter is studying MBBS in Bangalore. It's going to be her wedding, and she said to buy Tanishq. So, therefore, somebody who would normally have bought from an organized jeweler is buying because the next generation is impelling the family to buy from, you know, Tanishq. So, partly trust, but I'm sure mostly design and brand and the aspirational values of Tanishq. So, some acceleration in this is also happening because of these broader factors.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Jay Kumar Doshi from Kotak. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity. How has making charge net of discounts trended on a per grammage basis over the past 12 months for you at a portfolio level? And adjusted for, you know, higher gold coin sales, so if you leave aside that, but if you look at your wedding jewelry and studded portfolio, you know, we've seen 30-40% increase in gold price. Have you been able to pass on a similar increase in making charge to the customer? And has industry also passed it on?
Yeah, we are seeing making charges for plain jewelry holding up pretty well as a percentage. So even the per gram has gone up in line with the rise in gold price. We have not really seen any problem on that front.
Okay, so customers have absorbed that along with gold price inflation. And does it change the competitive, you know, from a price competitiveness, your positioning versus some of the local regional players are unorganized, or even, you know, that segment has also moved to along with it?
Actually, the I've not seen a dramatic shift in the making charge related issues so far in quarter three or even Jan for that matter. If at all, there is some amount of competitive intensity on the gold rate itself, you know, in terms of per gram and whatever different players are charging. So most of the competitive intensity is seen around the gold rate. And there in different markets is a different story. But on an overall average, yeah, there is a slight downward trend, especially in Q3.
Correct. And one final one, could you talk a little bit about, you know, some of the steps that you may have taken as a part of your war on waste program, particularly on the procurement side or on reducing your cost of, you know, the making or production for you? Anything that you can highlight?
Specifically for jewelry, you're asking?
Yes. Yes.
So, yeah, we have looked at it at two, three different angles. One is we work very extensively with our vendor partners as well as in-house. So we have, in a way, worked more towards lower cost production basis or supply basis. That is one angle. Second angle is we've looked at some savings in stone procurement, diamond procurement that is. And the third piece that we are doing right now is also looking at some amount of product re-engineering to enable lower price points as well as to kind of reduce the weight of products. So these are the top three things that we've done in terms of making charges. Labor charges beyond a point, it did not make sense to squeeze vendor partners because they also face a pretty challenging position and we didn't think it makes sense to do that. So we're working with them to innovate and thereby reduce the cost of the product by itself.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, a reminder once again to participants to please limit your questions to two per participant. The next question is from Kunal Vora from BNP Paribas. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. My question is on jewelry. How should we look at FY22 over FY20 for the jewelry division? Like in 2019, you had mentioned that sales growth in jewelry would go up by 2.5 times over FY18 to 23, which implied about 20% CAGR. Do you believe that FY21 was just an aberration and the journey towards 20% CAGR could resume, or you think COVID has had some adverse impact, and that outlook does not really hold. And second is on Carrot Lane. Like, it's done like fairly strong store expansion over the last 1 year, almost 70% store addition, like 70% increase in store space. Would this pace of store addition continue, and how is the mix between online and physical sales for Carrot Lane now?
Thank you, Kunal. We are quite confident and bullish about FY22. We're just in the final phase of our actual planning for the year, and we will talk about it in detail in our next call.
Okay. Fair enough. Second question was on Carrot Lane. Could you hear that, or should I repeat?
No, we couldn't hear it. Can you hear it?
Okay.
Yeah, what is the question?
Yeah, the question was on Carrot Lane. You had like a strong store expansion, physical like space has gone up almost 70% in last 1 year. So would this pace of store addition continue, and also how is the sales mix between online and physical store now?
So, I think we are seeing good growth in both retail, same store, as well as the benefit of new store additions. Earlier, even the mall stores were taking time to recover, but now that recovery has also happened. And overall, physical retail is now started showing growth. Online continues to, of course, rock and do even better. They are continuing to blaze ahead on online, and online including joint closures with the store. So both the channels have grown. Was that your question?
Yeah. The question was on the focus going forward will be what? Store expansion.
So yes, okay. The focus going forward will continue to be also on store expansion. In fact, expansion has already commenced and continued along the journey that was there for the year as well as next year. So that will continue.
Understood. Okay, that's it from my side. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Teja Shah from Spark Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity. So if we see watches recovery has been understandably subdued this quarter, but even if we stretch the observation period, the growth in watches has been volatile for a while now, and we either hit high teens of growth or low single digit or degrowth there. So what is happening there in terms of we are not able to reach a sustainable growth there? And are we seeing any value migration in favor of wearables, which is playing heavy on the overall growth for the category?
So in this financial year, obviously, we have seen Q1 as well as Q2 being depressed because of COVID. Q3 recovery has actually been pretty good compared to what we had thought. And at around 88-89% recovery is higher than what we had estimated, considering it's a discretionary category. And, you know, obviously there's an element of gifting, but still it's not an easy category. Is there some migration towards smartwatches? Yes, and we have also done well in the smartwatch category. We have a product called Titan Connected X, which actually did pretty well in quarter three. But overall, we are kind of ahead of what we had thought in terms of recovery in quarter three for the main analog watch business, which is almost at 90%, and expecting almost full recovery in quarter four.
Just one follow-up on that. What will be wearables contribution in our overall segment sales, and what will be our market share in the same category?
So right now the contribution is less than 5%. In terms of market share, we have been number two in terms of volume in the last 2 years. This year, because of COVID, that has slipped a bit because of shipments not coming in. But our estimate is that this category, which is growing, we are going to retain the number two volume over the course of the financial year.
And what will be our market share in value terms?
Value terms will be much lower because there are players who are very high on the average price point.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Avnish Agarwal from PL India. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi sir, thanks for the opportunity. My question is on the jewelry segment, where we have seen a lot of, you could say, change in our working capital terms, and we have also indicated that there's an increase in the element of gold on these. So what I would like to know is, first of all, what is the proportion of gold on these now? And as we have even sold the gold which we got in the gold for gold in exchange, the bullion was sold. So is the current number going to be sustainable? What is the current number? And will it result in, is there a structural change in the way we have been managing the gold inventory? That is first question. The second question is on the Titan commodity, the, you can say, the membership we have taken in the MCX. So what impact will it have on the operations of Titan Industries? Thank you.
I didn't get the second question. Was it clear?
Mm-hmm. MCX, you have taken.
Yeah.
Status
of that. Okay.
So gold on loan is on in inventory value terms as on December end, 31st December, was at 56% of the inventory value. That was your specific question. Is it sustainable? I think it will be broadly in that direction itself. Yes, it is sustainable. We are constantly kind of managing that actively to optimize cash flows and also to take advantage of the natural hedge that gold on lease offers. On
the commodity part, I think Titan commodities, yeah, we have, we got our approvals, we are putting our processes in place, and I would assume that by the end of this month, we should start trading.
Hello?
Yeah.
What benefit could Titan commodities would have for...
Fundamentally, one is de-risking. We've had some issue with one of the brokers that we had to deal with. So one is therefore that we are doing it internally and therefore that risk element is gone. Second, of course, there is an economic benefit because the brokerage charges, etc., that we incur, the cost that we incur, it's just to somebody else, is not going to happen. So that's something here.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Shirish Pardeshi from Centrum. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good evening and thanks for the opportunity and congrats for the sharp recovery. Just one observation, by speaking to maybe who got married, I think what one observation which came across is that because there was a limitation of number of people attending the wedding, so pure say the savings has been given back to in terms of jewelry and consumer durable part. How far, Venkat, in your experiences, this is true? And is it going to be a regular phenomenon going forward? That's the first question.
There is no specific data which supports this. In the sense, there is no research which says that jewelry as a share of total wedding expenditure was X last year and it has become, you know, 1.5X this year or something like that. But many conversations across the network where franchisees are, you know, playing back conversations from customers who have spoken about this change happening, this behavior happening in their own life. That's one. The second is, even in conversations that we had with our customers on Google Meets way back in June, July, the customers were starting to think aloud about this. So we are sort of connecting the dots and concluding that this is actually happening. And given the nature of this underlying phenomenon of, you know, travel totally being absent for 21, certainly, and the weddings being constrained in terms of the nature of celebration, the pomp part, if it is actually happening, it will continue to happen for at least 21.
Venkat, I was just asking this in a point of view that you have definitely in the ticket size, during the wedding season would have really gone up. So maybe at your franchise level, you would have seen this number. So I'm just trying to confirm our assumptions that it has come back to us.
No, the thing is that the manner in which the purchases happen will actually determine the ticket size. It's very difficult to, you know, connect The ticket size increase is the only confirmation of this happening, because the people do buy in multiple parts and accumulate towards a particular wedding and all that. So that's why I'm saying that these are, you know, theories we had. The overall feeling from the network about the wedding business is very, very positive. And there are many examples of franchisees talking about customers sort of thinking aloud and sharing this detail. So we're just connecting all that and concluding that it is indeed happening.
Thank you. We'll be able to take one last question. We take the last question from the line of Ashwin Jain from ICICI Prudential Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Good evening, gentlemen. thank you for taking my question. There are companies like Warby Parker which have built multi-billion dollar market cap in Western markets by selling eyewear. For Titan, the eyewear business started almost 15 years ago, but it doesn't seem to have contributed significantly to profitability or shareholder wealth. My question arrives on this. In your watch and jewelry segment, the ratio of traded goods is 20%, whereas in eyewear, this is close to 85%. Is this split what is responsible for the lack of profitability on the eyewear? And what are your plans to change this in the future, if any? Thank you.
Ashwin, yeah. Hi, Ashwin. Thank you very much for that perspective. You are right that the eyewear business has taken much longer to deliver the results that it was expected to deliver. But like we spoke on the call, 2020 has been a transformational year for this business. And we have worked on multiple parts of both the operation side as well as the balance sheet side. And there has been a substantial transformation on various KPIs from channel mix, channel cost, in-house production share, non-profitable stores, manufacturing consolidation, and so on and so forth. And quarter on quarter, the performance has been substantially improving, and our plans for FY22 will be a very, very respectable profitability and a reasonably good return on capital employed, which finally will be the way to deliver shareholder value. And in FY23, I'm confident that the EBIT margin will, we are looking at a double-digit EBIT margin and certainly a very, very attractive return on capital. So with that, and we are very clear and confident that we have settled all the issues to do with the business, and in the next 2 to 3 years, it will be a rocking business. Obviously, given the nature of the jewelry industry and the substantial head start that Tanishq has had in the company compared to either, and watches also, the share of the business relative to those two is of that order. But we intend to, you know, sort of make up to a significant extent in the next 5 years. But without doubt, by FY23, it will be rocking in terms of financial performance on both EBIT and ROCE.
Thank you, sir. Just one other comment, please. I'd like to commend you on your disclosures. In an era where companies are reducing the transparency and disclosures, it's very heartening to see you give segment-wise depreciation, for example, and I hope this continues in the future. Thank you so much.
Thank you for that very much. Of course, it will continue.
Thank you very much. We'll take that as the last question. I would now like to hand the conference back to the management team for closing comments.
Thank you very much once again. And we hope to have an investor conference, in-person investor conference in May. And I hope all of you are able to attend in person and help the whole world return to normalcy. Thank you.
Thank you very much. On behalf of the Titan Company Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect your lines.